Good afternoon, Monroe, West Monroe, and surrounding areas. This is Deborah Chandler, your host for Vocal Vibes. Must be Wednesday afternoon at 2 o'clock, and I appreciate all of you tuning in to your public radio station. I have one of my favorite people in the whole world sitting across from me today. This is a special day for me. I have asked this young man to be my guest for several years. And with his schedule, we've just worked it out that he was able to be here today. I'm speaking of my friend, my colleague, one of the best people I know, Reverend Dr. Welton Gaddy. Hello, Welton.
Hey, Deb.
Oh, I got you loud.
Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I really have been wanting to come. I've not understood why you wanted me to come and sing, but we'll do what you say.
Just wait until I say go. That sounds like our church service, doesn't it?
Yes.
Welton always offers to sing, but I'm like, you just wait till I cue you. Welton Gaddy, if you do not know the name, is president of the Interfaith Alliance based in Washington, D.C., but for my purposes, more importantly, he is my boss at Northminster Church. He is the senior pastor at Northminster Baptist Church here in Monroe. He has authored well over 20 books, and this bio I'm reading is probably old. It's probably more like 30. He hosts a weekly radio show on Air America Radio called State of Belief. And he's recognized as a leading advocate for protecting the boundaries between religion and government. Now, that's your Interfaith Alliance job.
That's correct. Yes, we work on religious freedom issues, trying to protect churches, houses of worship of all kinds across the religious spectrum from intrusion by government, and also protecting government from intrusion by religion wanting to use the government to establish itself.
And that is your week job.
That's correct.
W-E-E-K,
that's
weekly
correct.
Job. And then he comes in to Monroe usually on Fridays.
Yes.
And he's here Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and usually flies back to Washington on Monday morning, sometimes Sunday. So having him in two places is good for America. It's good for Monroe. The things he does for us that most of us do not even know, representing and protecting the church and the government, I would think.
Right.
And also when he's in the pulpit, he's got a message of inclusion. Absolutely more than anyone I've ever had the pleasure to hear or to work with. And if you don't know Northminster Church, really this isn't a show about come be a part of our church. This is a show about telling you who this man is and what he does for our nation and what he does for our community. Our church, Northminster Church, where I'm the music director and Welton is the senior pastor, I said Northminster Baptist, and I say that word and kind of pause because it's not Southern Baptist.
It's not Southern Baptist. It's related to the Alliance of Baptists, which is based now in Atlanta. This is a group of people that became concerned about the preservation of the historic Baptist tradition and decided that for collegial purposes, not for political purposes or denominational purposes, but for collegial purposes to bond together and to be encouragers to one another regarding what authentic Baptists always have been and are.
And because, I mean, when I said that your message is that of inclusion, say a little bit about
well,
that.
I mean, I think the most inclusive person that I've ever known was Jesus. And so the inclusion of which you speak, and that means that when people come into the congregation to visit, that we don't ask them if they're a Democrat or Republican or Independent. We don't ask them what their salary is or their economic status. We don't ask them whether they're married or divorced. We don't ask them if they are gay or straight.
If they're Catholic or Presbyterian?
The gospel, as I understand it, is not about adjectives, but it's about nouns. And the key is, if you are a person, then you were created by God and you're loved by God and you're welcome where the people of God gather. And that's what we try to both emphasize and practice.
Now, this is a vocal music show. This is Vocal Vibes. And we'll probably have a little bit more talking than music. We are going to play musical examples here in a few minutes. Welton and I are going to play a few and then speak to them. But it's just such a treat to be able to sit across from Welton and have his undivided attention for an hour. And I'm pleased that our listeners get to listen. So this is just my time with Welton, and glad that we are able to let folks listen to this. Welton, as your music director, as Northminster's minister of music, because that's the way I'm treated, because of the way you treat me and the music and its importance in our congregation. Mm-hmm. Now, if you listen to KEDM, you know that Northminster is, you hear their service announcement on the air that we are a church supporting the arts in this community. Speak to how that happened briefly, and what am I really meaning by that?
Well, what I want to do first of all is clarify the way I see you, because those are good titles, but I view you as a colleague who is a worship leader, as I am a worship leader. The experience of worship should touch in some way all of the senses. And you cannot touch all of the senses by rhetoric. That takes diverse means of conveying the truth. And so, yes, we try to incorporate art, all kinds of art, from the practice of drawing to painting to dancing to telling stories, all of those kinds of things. But the gospel is for the whole person. There used to be a group that would talk about the whole gospel for the whole person. I think we have a responsibility to touch every segment of a person's life, whether it's with comfort, whether it's with challenge, whatever it is. And so we need all of these ways to do that. We spend a lot of time, for example, on floral design, to see that floral design in the service is not just a bouquet of flowers, but it's something that touches what the text of that day is about, what the sermon for that day is about. So it is... It is a compassionate assault on the whole person, so that all of the person is involved in the experience of worship and leaves also impacted holistically by the experience of worship.
And don't you think that not everyone experiences everything the same way?
Oh, no.
And so if you're sitting there, and this really isn't a, you know... saying this interview is not about Northminster Church. I don't want anyone to misunderstand that. It's about understanding what Welton's take is on some of these important subjects, and we're incorporating what we do every week at Northminster, because that's where we do worship or experience worship. But the person sitting in the pew may appreciate the floral design on a Pentecost Sunday, mm-hmm. with all of the red. And, I mean, Keith and Penny do amazing things with the designs. And to see their designs on any given Easter Sunday or like I said, Pentecost, or any Sunday for that matter, someone may see that more than they feel that.
Mm-hmm.
And appreciate that more than they appreciate singing the hymns.
Right.
Or hearing the sermon. Or, you know, they may see that and really worship that way.
I think that's true, and it's terribly important both from the ministerial side and from the side of the people who sit in the pews to understand what the purpose of worship is. There's only one purpose in worship, and that is to commune with God and to give God praise, to make confessions, to open your heart to new insights, and to nurture the dedication of yourself. If worship is about anything else, it's not worship. It's a distortion of worship, or it's idolatry.
Or display.
So everything we're talking about, including worship, is not about performance. It's not about demonstration. It is our gift to God. And Will Campbell, who was a favorite writer of mine and a good friend, said that his aunt always wore her chenille bathrobe to church because she was taught that God deserved the best we had and as the best she had.
I love it. Isn't that wonderful? I love that. All right. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Reverend Dr. C. Welton Gaddy, the president of Interfaith Alliance. And to us here in Monroe, Louisiana, he is the senior pastor of Northminster Church. And Welton, again, thank you for being here. We're going to continue to discuss many things in this hour of Vocal Vibes. And you are listening to KEDM Public Radio, and I'm Deborah Chandler. Here every Wednesday, I get to play wonderful music for you, and I hope you appreciate some of it and learn to appreciate things that maybe you had never heard before. We're going to change gears just a little bit, but keep talking with Welton about some of these ideas, but work it into music.
Good.
And I have prepared a few excerpts from different genres. Now, at Northminster, we appreciate good music, but the word good music to one is may not be good music to another. I'm going to play an example of a piece, and then I'm going to ask Welton just to tell me what it makes him think of, how he thinks, just to comment on it. And then we have several of these examples, and then we'll talk to him about much more as we go through the hour here. So you are listening to Vocal Vibes on KEDM Public Radio. KEDM Public Radio, Vocal Vibes, Deborah Chandler here with Welton Gaddy. Welton, how does that, you closed your eyes.
I did. It made me close my eyes.
All right, that's where it all began. I tell my students when I teach these music appreciation classes, I say, I don't care if you like gospel music, toe-tapping country, classical music, or rap. It started here.
Mm-hmm. I think, Debbie, the thing that comes to mind first, I'll try not to say this over and over and over, though it's going to apply to everything that you play.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the most important question to ask about music in church is, what's its purpose? And does it direct your attention to God rather than to yourself or to something else? This piece, I suppose that was a Gregorian chant.
Yes.
It strikes me as a way to get into worship. You decide to go to worship on a Sunday morning, and you're already late because breakfast went overtime, and the car is cold, and you have to sit there and warm it up, and you're griping about that, and at the same time,
You have a run in your hose.
Yeah, you have. Well, I've never had a run in my hose, but the baby throws up, and so by the time you get in the pew, you are so hassled and fragmented that you need a moment to take you from all of this stuff going on around you to a focus on God. I find the Gregorian chant to do that. It's not earthly. It is really mystical, and it puts you in a whole different place with a whole different mindset and a whole different set of emotions. My instinct was to close my eyes.
And not all music would make you feel that way.
Oh, no. I mean, I might close my eyes to some music because I can't stand it.
All right. Well, we're going to – we might play one of those.
I'd be fine.
We might play. But do you think that type of music has its place – in modern congregations?
I absolutely think it does. Will everyone appreciate it in the same way that you and I have just talked about it? No, because they haven't been trained to do that. I think one of the great needs in church music right now is to help decide the question of what's the purpose of church music. Is it to entertain the congregation, or is it to enhance a person's experience with God? That question has to be answered. Secondly, people have to realize that the diversity of church music is a very positive thing. It's not a negative thing. And there's different music for different emotions. Mm-hmm. There are different musical pieces for different worship experiences. And that's why you have to ask, what is the purpose of this? What is it going to do to the worshiper? And what does it mean in relation to God?
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad you said it, and I wish I had. But you always put it so well, and I wish I'd said it first. You know, part of me, I am a trained classical musician. I grew up in the Baptist church, and we'll talk more about that kind of music in a little bit. But I cannot understand, I guess, as a Christian, how anyone, I don't care if you really don't like that kind of music, how you couldn't appreciate the moments you're allowed to hear that. I mean, I remember, like, my dad would always, he would come see me in the operas that I sang in, all in college. But I'd look out sometime and he'd be asleep. And I'm like, well, thank goodness he at least came. He tried. He appreciated what I did, but he didn't appreciate what I was singing. I mean, he just didn't understand it and he was bored.
Right.
But this is the kind, I can't imagine anybody just not being able to take a deep breath and let it enter their brain or their...
Yeah, I actually can understand
that. Can you?
But yeah, because you're trained. You've got a trained ear. You've got a trained voice.
So you're saying that wouldn't sound beautiful and pleasant to everyone.
Well, it would not sound beautiful and pleasant to everyone, first. But secondly, there are a lot of people who are of the opinion that there is only one type of music that belongs in church.
I gotcha.
And if it's not that type of music, not only do they not like it, it's wrong. And that's one of the reasons they don't like it.
Hold that thought. Here we go. You're listening to Vocal Vibes on KEDM Public Radio. I'm Deborah Chandler here with Reverend Dr. Welton Gaddy. And we're going to continue with his last statement. We're going to listen to another piece.
Troublesome times are here, pilgrim's heart is fair, dear. Friends we all call dear, and as they stay, open our hearts to the gods and come to tell us we buy. See the red bill of bells drop, this is a way.
Well, Welton, did I go from the extreme to the whatever? But, you know, we grew up with the quartets.
Exactly. I want to say something about the Robert Shaw piece.
The Thomas Tallis, If You Love Me, Keep My Commandments by Shaw.
But because what comes to mind when I heard that was, that is such good theology. And I think musicians have a heavier responsibility than any other person on a church staff to look at the text, look at the lyrics, and be sure that we're not only singing good music, but we're singing good theology and something that's consistent with the gospel, because that doesn't always happen. So that, to me, is one of the great critiques of a lot of church music. I don't care whether it rhymes or not. I want it to be conveying the truth of the gospel to people who are listening to it. And sometimes we have put such bad theology with a great tune and rhythm that we want to remember the rhythm and the tune, and in the process, we memorize bad theology. So I don't like that at all.
Well, is that good theology because it's straight out of the Bible?
Absolutely, because Jesus is saying, and it's a terribly important emphasis, because Jesus is saying, look, you all are talking about how much you love me. How do I know that? Well, I know it when you do what I say. So you can't be in worship and hear music that allows someone to say, I love God, but I hate Democrats, or I love God, but I hate poor people. That's not good theology. It goes exactly against what Jesus said. So in this piece, there is that wonderful theology that, yeah, it's great to love, but the proof of love is in how you express the love to people in need. And it's done, and it's done in beautiful music. Now, I happen to know the Blackwood Brothers because I grew up on quartets.
Absolutely.
Did you ever hear the Happy Goodman family?
My Vestal Goodman. I grew up every Sunday morning. I could smell bacon cooking, and I could hear Jubilee. You're invited to this happy. You remember that?
That's
show?
Good. See, you get to sing, and I don't.
Yeah, the Stamps Quartet,
Stamps Baxter Quartet, and the Stamps Baxter Quartet book was in our house right beside the Bible.
Absolutely.
So I understand quartet music, and I love to hear it in its place. Now, again, back to my question, what's its purpose? What does it do to the people who listen to it? How does it connect us to God? Those are important. There is some music, and I'm sure that there will be some others that you play mm-hmm. today that may be in this same category for me.
For
I'm not
you.
Saying
right.
for anybody else, but for me. I love quartet music when I'm maybe sitting at breakfast, eating a piece of bacon and listening to
right.
it. I don't enjoy it as the anthem on Sunday morning that is intended to lift people's vision to God and to help facilitate that experience that brings perhaps repentance and confession and all of that. So it's not bad music. It's just, where is it used?
Okay. All right. And what about, do you think, is it about the quartet sound? Is that what people like, or do you think they like the message, or it's a mixture? Because we grew up with all of this, you know, this sound, and it didn't matter if you listened to the Stamps or the Happy Goodman family or the Florida Boys or the Blackwood
yeah.
Brothers. It was the gospel sound.
Yeah.
Somebody was going to slide up to the high note, and
yeah.
the bass was going to go down to the bottom. And
well, I grew up
in
I grew up in a Christian fundamentalist church, and so we couldn't dance. And so listening to the Blackwood Brothers, you could pat your feet and you get awful close.
You got awful
to
close.
Dancing,
and clap your hands,
and that's the best thing we could do.
Okay,
and that was all right.
Okay, all right. And for our listeners, we have someone right here in our community, in our church, that yeah. sang with the Blackwood Brothers.
That's exactly right.
Robert Crawford,
yeah,
I
sure
know
did.
You're listening.
Yeah, he did.
And he used to sing with them.
Yep.
All right. We're talking with Reverend Dr. Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance, pastor, senior pastor at Northminster Church here in Monroe. And we're chatting, and we're letting you listen, and I hope you're enjoying the show. We've got a lot more music coming up on Vocal Vibes. You're listening to KEDM Public Radio. This is Deborah Chandler. It's Vocal Vibes, and it is my great pleasure to have my friend, my colleague, just a wonderful mentor to me, Dr. Welton Gaddy. He's also my senior pastor at the church where I am music director, Northminster Church on Loop and Lammy, right on the corner. Welton, thank you for being with me.
It's fine. Thank you.
Welton is the president of Interfaith Alliance. He's in Washington during the week, most weeks. We just happened to catch him a week that he's home, and we've been trying to find a time to have this conversation and let you listen in. And, Welton, we're talking about music, different genres of music, and how they do or don't fit into a worship service. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, in this area, in our listening area, we probably have every denomination you could name, you think?
Probably so. In fact, my guess is that the religious diversity here is even greater than most people think. I know we have a very fine Jewish community. We have an Islamic study center here with that has a wonderful congregation with which I have worshiped before. And music is, in fact, Debbie, a link between all of these different kinds of congregations, because in almost every one of them, music is there. And it may not be. I mean, Church of Christ mm-hmm. congregations don't use instrumentals or instruments, but every one of the houses of worship that I know of here have music in the service. So music is terribly important for that.
Why don't they use instruments?
It's based on
Church of Christ.
Yes, and some Churches of Christ, some in the Church of Christ tradition, do use instruments. It's just like
they use the voices as instruments. I think
they use
too.
The voices as instruments, and there are a text or two in the scriptures that make them think that that they shouldn't use music in worship. Instrumental music and worship, but even then, the voice is the instrument.
But you know what? I've heard that they're singing, and it is done with the greatest fervor.
Sure.
That's the word that yeah. comes to mind. I mean, it's just what wonderful singing.
Right
from the gut, from
right.
the heart and from the gut.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to play what, if you're just joining us, Welton Gaddy is my guest, and we're talking about different kinds of music. We've listened to chant. We've listened to Renaissance, If You Love Me, Keep My Commandments by Thomas Tallis, and then I really did a 180 on him and played a Blackwood Quartet that he and I both grew up with, and going to those all-night singings, the number of times I fell asleep on a church pew listening to gospel quartets at about 3 in the morning. I'm going to play another piece and let Welton comment. You're listening to KEDM Public Radio. You're listening to KEDM Public Radio. It's not in German, Welton, but it's a good Lutheran chorale.
If I hadn't needed to stay in front of this microphone, I would have stood up.
Yeah.
And I might even have walked around.
It makes you want to just, yeah.
You know, that's one of those. That's one of those hymns, great hymns, that I was trying to describe a while ago, and you just have to listen to it, and you've got what I was trying to say. The lyrics of that are profound. They're biblical to the core. They are about challenge. They're about promise. They deal with fear. They offer comfort. They say, stick to your guns about what you believe. All of that. And they got put with good music. And so you've got here a wonderful biblical text that could be cumbersome. It's not your just easy flowing text. It's about Scripture, and it doesn't try to make all of the rhymes that have to be made. It's really good truth, and then that's put with a music that is just unmatched in its ability to inspire.
Grabs you by the bootstraps.
It absolutely does.
Now, and it was, I mean, this is Martin Luther,
right?
The guy who said to the Catholic Church in 1520, sometimes mm-hmm. like that, a long time ago.
Yeah.
He said, he wrote down 90 things he didn't like about the Catholic Church and went and nailed them to the door. And right. one of them was about the singing.
Right.
And this was his, you know.
Yeah, he was a great fan of congregational singing. And in compliment to that, he was also insistent that what happens in worship should be understandable to the congregation. And so he wanted the Catholic Church to open up and let the Mass be understood, not in Latin, but in the language of the congregation. And he wanted them to know that good theology about the salvation coming by faith, not by any other way, that the church being a vibrant human instrument for God in the world. And every time I hear that song, and I love to do Reformation Sunday mm-hmm. in the church because we sing the song at other times, but it's central there. And I can always see Martin Luther, a little monk who mm-hmm. the first time he served communion, was so awed by it that his hands shook where they could barely serve the elements uh-huh. of communion. And he was standing there before the whole Catholic Church hierarchy, and they gave him a choice of recanting, and he said, "I can't recant, so help me God." That's how you keep a conviction. And let me tell you, you build great churches, you build great cathedrals, you build great mosques and temples out of conviction, not out of rhythm, not out of anything that we can create, but out of a conviction that comes from God.
And he was saying, can have a relationship with my God.
Right.
And I don't need you to ask forgiveness for me. I can ask forgiveness personally, one-on-one to God.
And you know, Debbie, I think it's important to say, because I don't know about where you grew up, but where I grew up, Baptists in particular were very prejudiced against Catholics.
Oh, yes.
And we weren't even sure that Catholics
were Christians,
unfortunately.
Yes.
So I want to follow it by just saying, in case anybody has been influenced by that tradition, that of all of the denominations, the Catholic Church has shown more courage and more willingness to change out of Vatican I and II than any other denomination that I know, because they decided to rewrite their liturgy, to do the Mass in the common language.
Vernacular, that's right.
To bring in lay people as leaders in worship and to involve congregational singing. None of the rest of us have changed things that much.
That's
and they were
right.
doing it for the right reason,
long
because
before,
they wanted everybody to know. That's exactly
that's
right.
That's right. And you're right. Martin Luther, he was one who did say, you know, the Mass needs to be in German for Germans.
Yeah.
You know, and what do you feel about, you know, singing in Latin? If we sing a piece that was written in Latin, is that okay? When is it not okay?
You know, I know this is different mm-hmm. than some ministers, and, mm-hmm. and we could talk about the difference if you wanted to. I just assume not. But I don't tell a professional in music how to do music in the church. That person ought not to even be there if they don't already know how to do music in the church. So I think there are times when a Latin text or a German text is fine. I personally prefer, when we do that, to print, if it has lyrics, to print the lyrics
in English, the translation,
yeah. so that people understand it.
Well, you know, the music was written to follow a certain rhythm of text. So a lot of times it doesn't, the music itself doesn't translate.
Yeah.
The text might, but the music doesn't.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're talking with Welton Gaddy, and we're having a great time, and I keep looking at the clock. I don't want our hour to end. I want to keep going with a few more pieces, and I want to get to at least four or five or six more. So here we go with another example, and then we'll speak. You're listening to KEDM Public Radio. John Rutter.
Well, the great contemporary composers, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we talk a lot today. I hear the jargon of praise worship. I can't imagine worship without praise. In fact, I've written in a book on worship. I wrote that it is not Christian worship if praise is not a part of it, regardless of what the nature of the service is, because praise is essential to worshiping God. If what John Rutter wrote is not praise music, then I've never heard any, because that just fills one up with praise and joy, and it makes you want to sing whether you can sing or not.
That's absolutely true. And a lot of, you know, John Rutter gets a bad rap because a lot of people say, oh, you know, he's predictable, all his music sounds alike. He's a friend of mine, and I'm not throwing names, I'm not, you know, but he just happens to be. I've worked with him. I've had him at my church in Tallahassee two different times. We send each other Christmas cards. You know, so I mean, he is a friend, and he knows that people say that about him, and he's gone a little bit over the line. He's written for the BBC. He's written some Broadway stuff. He's just done. But what composers haven't, and what composer wants to, who's worth their salt? I mean, we are blessed with D.H. Clark's music, but I can tell it's D.H.'s music.
Sure.
It has a sound to it. And people who listen to my show, they know that I'm going to play Eric Whitaker or Morton Lauridsen. Mozart, you can tell it's Mozart.
Yeah.
You know, well, forgive me. You know, it.
I mean, to tell you the truth, I enjoy diversity greatly. In fact, I mean, that's obvious in our talking about all these different types of music. But I like a producer or a writer who is predictable, because what I think of him is when I think of him as being predictable, I think I'm going to pick it up and he's going to make me want to sing.
Right.
I like that.
That's right. And you know what you're going to get. You can trust him. And that as a choral director, we had David Childs here the last couple of days, and we sang five of his pieces last night. When you see his name on a piece of music, I don't have to go, oh, I wonder if I'm going to like this. I like David Child's music. I like John Rutter's music. And I say it right now, like it or not, I like it. Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go. We're going to play another type. You're listening to KEDM Public Radio. EDM Public Radio. Now, Welton Gaddy as my guest. Why am I playing this? How does this fit in with, what is your take on this fitting in with a show that we're talking about sacred music? That's from Les Mis right off Broadway.
Obviously, it's not a piece of sacred music. I want to be very confessional and say that we used this piece of music just prior to a sermon less than a month ago. I think you have to be very careful here because we don't typically do secular music in our worship service. But we used it to make a point that's implicit in using it, and that is that on any given Sunday, in any given congregation, there are going to be people there with broken dreams, broken hearts. They're hurting. They don't feel like rejoicing. Identify with that. That sometimes in worship we convey that we are so good that we don't understand all these hurts. Well, what is sung by Fontaine in that piece identifies the person who most needs the comfort of Scripture and the presence of God.
So you're thinking the overall story of Les Mis, mm-hmm. and where Fontaine fits in, her life,
yeah.
and her storyline, and the actual words to this song.
Absolutely, and it's about us. Mm-hmm. And because we talk about theology and mystery and all of these things, sometimes people get the idea, well, this is all somewhat theoretical. It's not theoretical. It's personal to the core.
Right.
And so there is nobody that listens to that in a worship service when it's sung well that is not ready to hear a word of hope or a word of healing, a word of change. And we didn't do just that piece. We did some other pieces from Les Mis in that service.
Do you hear the people sing?
And when you do that, you are conveying a message, and you're using the best instruments and media that you have to convey that message. And the purpose is not to entertain the audience like they're entertained when they go see Les Mis on Broadway. It is to connect real life with real truth.
So that was going to be my next question. Did you want us to do this and use this piece of music to complement your sermon? Did you want it for the Broadway effect, or did you want it for the message of the Broadway show? Now you both?
No, I wanted people to understand that there are sources of truth mm-hmm. that can be found in the secular community as well as in the religious community.
I mean, someone can go sit in the Broadway show or a play,
yeah.
and find God.
Absolutely. In fact, that's one of the books I want to do sometimes, God on Broadway. But I would not use that if I thought the purpose was entertainment, mm-hmm. because that would be a distortion of worship. It would be a violation of worship. Mm-hmm. And that's not the purpose. And it wasn't to show people how well the choir could sing.
Or Hannah Clark.
Or Hannah Clark sang.
Sang that. And it's it's kind of life-changing to hear her sing that. I'm sorry. I mean, she's listening, I apologize if I embarrassed you, but I was going to sing it, and then somebody said, no, Hannah sang it last time, and I went, wow, let's do that. And
right.
I'm so glad I did.
Yeah.
And we're not going to give it away, but, you know, if you're not planning to go to church anywhere and you like this kind of thing, we're going to do something similar to this coming Sunday. I don't know how much we want to say about it, or if you want to go ahead and...
Well, I don't think we should say we're doing Man of La Mancha. But,
well, let's don't.
But
isn't Impossible Dream from that?
It is.
Let's don't tell them what we're doing.
Yeah.
But again, you're going to use the situation of the show, how it fits in, how the message of the...
If you look at the words of Man of La Mancha, and especially the words of Don Quixote, mm-hmm. and you put them alongside the words of Jesus. Now, I'm not comparing the two.
Right, right.
But you put them alongside the words of Jesus. And then you read the Apostle Paul saying that the wisdom of God has become the foolishness of this world, and the foolishness of this world is something that God uses to convey truth. That's what we're doing.
That's what we're doing.
And I want to go back to what I said in the first. If anything in worship is about drawing attention to anyone other than God, you ought to scrap it.
Amen. All right, here we go, another one. If you're just joining us, we're with Dr. Welton Gaddy from Northminster Church here in Monroe and president of the Interfaith Alliance. He's the author of 30-plus books, and we're getting a lot of his thoughts, wisdom, and speaking from the heart here on Vocal Vibes. And we're going to listen to yet another piece. We've got about 10 minutes left in the show, and we thank you for joining us. This is KEDM Public Radio. Who wouldn't like that?
Oh, my goodness. A spiritual is, I think of all the genres of music, it is in many ways the most unique and the most powerful. I always encourage people, though, if you're doing a spiritual, don't try to do it. If you're not a black choir, don't try to do it as a black choir, because you will not. You can't, first of all, you can't do that. And secondly, you shouldn't do it. Because the other question I ask with spirituals is, do we have the right to sing it? Because this is...
It's not our song?
No. It's the pathos of people who were being oppressed in a way that none of us can imagine. And it was the deepest expression of their faith. And it wasn't about the fun of the spiritual. It wasn't about the color of the person singing it. It was about what happens when one group of people oppress another group of people, and the only outlet they have for screaming is to sing to God. So be sure that you have the right to sing it.
I 100% agree. I agree. Wow. Okay. We're going to go yet to one more.
Okay.
KEDM Public Radio, Welton Gaddy, Contemporary Christian.
Personally, that's not something I would choose to listen to, not because it doesn't have a good message, not because it doesn't have an attractive rhythm. And I have to just admit, Debbie, that this takes me all the way back to my growing up days in a fundamentalist church. We had a song director, and that's what we called him, song director, named Shorty McCullum, and he was, and his wife, and they used to every Sunday night they'd sing a piece, and I thought they were singing love songs to Jesus. There's nothing wrong with singing love songs to Jesus. I think they are better done at home than in a corporate worship experience. But let me hasten to say, I respect people who enjoy that kind of music. I respect people who appreciate it, whether it's singular or in worship. I just would encourage you again always to ask, does this bring people closer to God, and what's its purpose in public worship?
Okay. Last piece. The patriotic hymn.
Mm-hmm. I like it. I can stand and sing it. I can put my hand on my heart as I listen to it. I can feel tears well up when it is done well. But I always do that kind of music with great caution, because it is very easy for us, particularly in this land, to identify as equals our love for God and our love for our nation. I love our nation, but not like I love our God. And I think that the church always, while affirming our national life and being patriots to it, the major contribution of the church to the government is to be the church, not to be a cheerleader for the government, not to put the government over the authority of the church and over the authority of Scripture. And sometimes we come off looking like our nation is God's special favorite. God has no favorites. And we need to remember that America is good when America's good, but when it's bad, we need to say that it's bad and be honest about it and try to make it better.
Wow. I'm going to write that down. That's exactly put into words the way that I feel. And I think it's hard to put something like that into words.
Yeah, you know? It is.
Last question. Is music the universal language?
How long do I
have? You've got about a minute.
I actually think love is the universal language, okay. But music is an excellent way in which to express it. Let me just say this quickly. In Davos, Switzerland, I met a woman who is part of the orchestra in Philadelphia. She was telling me that she had just been on a trip dealing with school kids in another part of the world. She met some kids who had never heard music.
Wow.
I couldn't imagine it.
Exactly.
And she said when they heard it, their eyes got wide, their smiles came to their faces. Yes, I think music is a universal language, and I think we've got to use music more in reconciliation between all of the world's religions and between us and those we don't like or those that don't like us.
Amen. Welton Gaddy, thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's fun.
For being here. I wish we could talk longer.
Well, I haven't got to sing either.
I know, and that's why darn, we don't have time. I'll have him back, I promise. Thank you for being here. Thank you for what you do for our nation and for our churches and for our God.
Thank you.
You're listening to KEDM Public Radio. Be kind and be well. Mm-hmm.